Hey Steele, good evening.
Good evening, Dave.
Oh man, how you doing, buddy?
So much better than the last time we talked. I've been well rested, got some sleep. I'm a new man.
You look great. You don't even look jaundiced anymore. Yeah.
Yeah.
The liver's working.
Yeah, it was scurvy, the doctor said. So just a little vitamin C and I'm back to normal.
Hey, Steele, I'm very excited tonight. We're friends from college, Steele, if you weren't aware of that.
We met a couple of times.
Yeah, that's how we know each other. We've got some of our buddies from college. We've got actually probably my closest friend of all time, Matthew Howard, and one of our just, I'm sorry, Jerem. And we also have Jerem Sidwell.
I really thought that was going to be my name after that.
Oh, a rare
Hey,
double
you on
guest
the podcast
appearance.
with my good acquaintances from college.
Yes, we knew each other. I think we were neighbors, right, Jerem?
That's right. Yeah, I
No, it's
was.
cool though, Jerem. He forgot that he and I even knew each other at all in college, and we're hosting this thing together. So this could be
Look
worse.
at your notes, like, oh yeah, Steele, guess what?
Oh, and Steele's joining me tonight too. I guess this guy. Okay, so we got Matt and we got Jerem. What else we got, Dave?
Looks like we
This
got a
is,
fifth guest as
if I'm
well.
not mistaken, this is your first episode with a sponsor, isn't that right? Haven't you guys been recently sponsored by Dunkin' Donuts?
Dave did land a Tang promotional deal a couple episodes back, but so this is the second
Yeah,
sponsorship.
but they're fully underwriting us now. The shirt I'm wearing is paid for by Dunkin'. Yeah, they're doing a great job for us.
Yep, punch a donut.
Which is funny, we actually received a dozen donuts from Dunkin' Donuts just 5 minutes before the podcast started. So thank you, Dunkin' Donuts.
Thank you, Dunkin' Donuts. Great donuts. Great hot chocolate.
They're a classy organization. They take
Yeah.
care of you. My children, that's all they've eaten for the past 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That's where we've
And
gone wrong. Our son's been throwing up all weekend. It was under, the doctor said, donut deficiency.
Hey, Jeremy, is there a fifth guest on the podcast as well?
Yeah, this is my 14-month-old daughter, Scarlett.
Oh, okay.
hi.
Scarlett? Ba 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 ba.
That was actually that was Jerem talking, not the daughter. She has a little bit higher pitched voice than that. But I figured we were buddies from college. I think we all have a few kind of humorous stories. So I thought we could maybe start off, maybe everybody tell a little college yarn that they got.
Well, I have basically just one story that people like to tell. The other ones people really don't like to tell. But this one, it involved a gorilla suit that we had made. And
This was handmade, right, Howard?
handmade gorilla suit that had gorilla gloves, gorilla shoes, gorilla mask, gorilla body, obviously. Anyway, I don't remember exactly why, but I was running around 4th of July night and in the gorilla costume, and there's all these teenagers out because they have this big parade right downtown Provo, and that's where I was. And there was probably about 10 teenage boys that were messing around in this dumpster near where we live. And I was like, I know what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna jump in there in my gorilla suit. I don't know, like scare the hell out of them. This is gonna be funny. So I jump in there
Good
in my
plan.
gorillas and start making all this gorilla noise, right? What could possibly go wrong? Well, these kids are smarter than me. They aren't even fazed, and they immediately encircle me and start pushing me, just pushing me around really hard. I'm bouncing back and forth between these 10 kids.
So they didn't fall for it. They didn't think it was a real gorilla attacking them and just run in fear of their lives.
That's been a tough
You know, they
college,
might.
Ivy League college.
Yeah, these kids are really bright.
Maybe they reacted
4.0.
appropriately if it had been a real gorilla. That might be the appropriate response.
Yeah.
Circle it, push it, confuse it. I don't know. But I
That's what they
quickly
say in all
realized
the nature documentaries
that I
when
had
encountering
been.
a wild gorilla, encircle and push it.
Circle it, push it, don't let it out. But I realized I'd been outsmarted by these high school kids. Like, they had got the best of me. And that was, I didn't like that feeling. And I thought, what's like the one thing I could do? What's the one thing I could do to like maintain my dignity and not, because I couldn't see anything. Being pushed around in that mask had shifted. I mean, I was like blind. The one thing I could do to maintain my dignity and not have to take my mask off and say, all right, you guys got me, good one. Okay, let me go. Like, I got pushed and I kind of fell back, and one of these kids just reached down and just found his groin area and just squoze as hard as I could. And he fell to the ground and screamed. He screamed, "That gorilla grabbed my nuts!" And all the other kids, they ran. At that point, they ran. They knew that they had met their match.
And you walked out of there with head held high, dignity intact.
Yeah. So I got the better of them. That's my one funny college story. The other ones are just sad and depressing.
But that escalated quickly, Howard. That went
fast,
from
man. That whole story took print. About 25 seconds.
And I would say if I were a psychotherapist, I might say somebody may have been looking for a reason to grab some teenager's junk. The gorilla suit was really just a pretext.
I dressed up in a costume to do something like that. So,
I have just a couple of short stories I'm going to share because we have two special guests on, and this is one about each of the guests. One year in college, me and Matt actually shared the same room, and I had to get up like at 6 a.m. every day to go stock soda machines, and I hated doing it. And at this point, Matt wasn't even enrolled in school. He just got up whenever he wanted to, but he made a point of setting his alarm about 5 minutes before my alarm was set every morning, and he'd set it to the smooth jazz station. And he'd have it just maxed out volume, smooth jazz, and it would go off. Smooth jazz would be playing. I would wake up and I'd just be angry. And every morning, Howard would say, "Smooth jazz, Jensen.
Smooth jazz, Jensen." Just like that every day.
Wow. Anytime I like tell some Howard stories from college, people are like, "Wait, this guy was your friend?"
See, that's the thing. When you tell it like that, Dave, I mean, even as I'm hearing it, I'm like, man, that was a really mean thing to do.
No.
Just wake up just to spite the person.
No. It got him up for his job. Was he ever late to stock soda cans?
No. And he was smooth when he was doing it, too.
And the thing was, he hated you at those moments more than his job, so he was able to see his job in a more positive light.
Thank you, Steve.
I think the thing about that story explains a lot, because when your friend Zach was on singing the praises of jazz and you just had no time for it, you're like, nope, not going to listen to that. Now I have the backstory for this deep and abiding hatred of jazz. Now I know where it comes from.
Any loud music at 6 a.m. is not going to fly. And Sidwell, he lived right next door to us for almost a year, and then lived around the block for a little while. Sidwell, I don't even remember how this happened. I don't know what was going on, but I remember there must have been some,
I think he needed to be put in his place.
I was probably smarting off to the doctor.
Yeah, he didn't understand what a doctor of nursing was. So Sidwell, how tall are you?
I'm 2 meters.
2 meters.
6'6". And
6'6". I'm about 1 meter tall.
It's true.
So we were just joking. I don't know what, but yeah, Sidwell came at me the wrong way. So I went straight at him, pushed him right into his window. Window cracked, broke, and Sidwell has not spoken to me since that day.
I thought it was your window. Was it your window or my window?
No, it was your window.
Yeah, your apartment. It was not, yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't going to break my window.
Well, no, we were standing outside in front, right? And you're pushing me into the window and through.
Yeah, what, 110 stitches? Is that what you needed?
Along my spine.
It was a record for Provo Hospital, from what I understand.
It was a real elaborate medical intervention just for Scarlett to be conceived.
It was. So on that same balcony, I had another friend named Jensen. I don't know if you remember this, Jensen, but Jared Jensen. And I was on that was the third story, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was down below on the first story. And my friend Jensen was trying to drop scoops of ice cream into my mouth from the third story. And I was trying to catch him. And I was like, okay, this is fun, you know, and I was getting pretty good at it. So then Howard came along, and Howard was like, hey, Sidwell, eat this. And he dumped an entire shoebox full of golf balls from the third story.
And I was like, smooth jazz, Sidwell.
Sidwell.
I mean, he was kind enough later because I was like, wow, that kind of hurt. And he was like, Sidwell, be a man. Come on. That doesn't hurt. And so he came down there and put on bike helmets and shoulder pads.
I remember that. I remember the bike helmets.
Yeah. And then he took it like a man with a bike helmet and shoulder pads. But the problem is, I mean, we've already established that I'm 6'6". So we stood facing each other. And every ball that hit off the top of Howard's head went right into my face. that was good times.
You know, guys, I can tell Dave's having a way better time than the normal podcast because his hair was sticking straight up. He was pulling his hair up. He was like, he was living life again. He was loving it. He doesn't touch his hair when it's just us. He's just thinking, oh, how do I get through this? Depressing.
Doctor's got to be groomed, right?
Yeah,
we actually addressed that in our last episode, my hairstyle. Hey, so, but Sidwell, Howard was your friend and he dumped golf balls on you? That doesn't make sense, does it?
I don't know. I don't even know why he's in my house right now. I thought pushing me through a window was bad, but.
How about you, Stillman? You have any fun?
At first, I had the wrong idea for what these stories were going to be, and I was going to tell a super story that doesn't belong in the podcast. So instead, I was thinking, living in that apartment next door to you and Howard and two doors down from Jerem, Jordan and I started a short-lived death metal band. It was called Murder, Death, Kill, and I was the lead screecher, and we recorded one song called Destructivator, I think, or Matt might have been the album. And I remember we recorded this because Jordan hooked up a mic and I just screamed like as angrily and as loudly as I could. And Jordan just played like a face shredding riff. And a guy came down from probably 12 apartments down. It was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon and asked us to turn the music down if we could stop. Jordan said, okay, yeah, okay. And then as soon as he left, we just played the song again. And the thing I remember about it was so much fun, and I got so into it. And I don't know how it happened, but I shredded something in my vocal cords, and I remember coughing up some blood that night, and then I lost my voice for almost a week. I talked like this for like 3 or 4 days. And I just thought it was the price to pay for living a metal life.
Can you give us a couple of chords from that? Yeah.
Every time you see my face, you have to scream, I'm not married! I'm
related! I'm related! Way to sacrifice for your honor.
Yeah. It was a classic, great song. Got a lot of radio play in the 2000s.
I just remember your voice being gone for like a week, and yeah, I think we made fun of you.
For
sure. Seems like something we
deserved.
Well, Howard certainly would.
No way, man. Howard was a gem. Howard never did anything mean to me. Just pity.
Yeah, I felt like your story was
I just pitied you.
So I'm excited to have you guys on. We've got a few things we're going to talk about. Jerem Sidwell is involved professionally in animation, from what I understand. I don't know what he does. I'm hoping it's Smurf related, but we'll figure out later on. But first, we're going to talk about Saturday morning cartoons, the best ones ever.
Yep.
And then we're going to go on, and we've got some questions. Jerem Sidwell is an expert in a number of areas, including Germany. And being awkwardly tall. And of course, we'll go into Unchained Melodies, and we have some book wisdom. But I'm excited for Saturday morning cartoons. I think this is something our modern children are missing out on because they can watch cartoons 24 hours a week and they don't get to have the beautiful ritual of Saturday morning.
Scarcity really did make them more valuable.
Oh, for sure. Jerem, what's some of your top Saturday mornings?
Well, first I'd like to say on Saturday mornings, little baby Scarlett and I will come down before mom wakes up and we'll watch cartoons on Saturday, which is, we don't usually watch cartoons. So I'm trying to keep that alive because I'm like, this is awesome.
What are you guys watching?
The Ultimate Spider-Man. And sometimes we watch Super Y when she's bored of The Ultimate Spider-Man. I used to watch X-Men.
Oh, yes.
Spider-Man, Thundercats, Voltron. Those were my favorites.
I loved the X-Men. It really got into it. Like, they would have, like, 5-episode-long story arcs just covering all the comic books that I read. I wanted to watch every single X-Men. And, it was classic Wolverine, bright yellow suit, blue underpants on the outside of his suit. You gotta love the underpants. And Cyclops, he had the yellow underpants on. It was just good stuff.
Yeah.
What kind of underpants were you wearing, Dave?
I was in the nude watching X-Men. Come on.
Yeah, seriously. I have a question about Voltron, actually. So
I meant right now.
I only have a vague memory. Go for it, Howard.
Sorry.
It's like Power Rangers. I feel like Power Rangers was a ripoff of Voltron.
Now, it was like the first Japanese cartoon on American TV. Is that right? Or was there others before it?
Oh, I don't know. It was the first one I watched.
Was it related to Transformers? I don't know enough about them, but it's like a robot thing.
No.
No?
It was just a way better version of Power Rangers. Their cat robots came together to form a sweet Voltron.
It's a lot like Pacific Rim, right?
Yeah, someone had to fight these giant monsters that wanted to destroy Japan, and it was Voltron, and they did a great job. There was one guy that was chubby, which I always appreciated because I was a chubby young man. And so one of the Voltron operators, like everyone else is super fit. The girls are like hot babes, but then there was one chubby Voltron dude that like they let in on the team.
And you know, there's a future for me after all.
He knew somebody to get in. I don't know how he did it. Yeah.
Director's son, probably.
Yeah, exactly.
So guys, I love cartoons. Anything that, I don't know, a 10-year-old boy would love is what I still love. So I loved G.I. Joe.
Me too.
Who's your favorite, Stillman?
I was really into Snake Eyes, the blind ninja.
I don't think he was blind, but I think he was missing his tongue because he couldn't speak.
Man, if he was blind and missing his tongue, he really overcame a lot of obstacles to be yeah, who he was.
He was the Helen Keller of of G.I. Joe.
Nice. My other favorite was Beachhead. Beachhead was great.
I don't even remember who it was. Who
super
that guy
memorable,
was.
Dave.
What?
Yeah.
Beachhead?
Yeah.
Isn't that somebody from Archie, the Archie comics?
No, man, that's Jughead. Got your heads mixed up.
But I know who Howard's favorite was because he's modeled his modern look almost entirely off of Gung Ho.
I thought you were going to say Destro.
No, Gung Ho. He was a Navy man, bald, large, muscular, and with an anchor tattooed on his chest, just like Howard.
Oh yeah. There I am. I'm looking at a picture of him right now.
Where's your stash?
Yeah.
Do you guys have either
that
you guys
guy
had a
was,
favorite?
That guy is so village people. That guy is like a gay icon.
Yeah, he is village people to the max. Wow, that's
an easy Halloween costume.
That is an easy Halloween costume. What about you? Forget Mr. Clean.
You've already got the outfit.
I've got the body. So.
Yeah. Do you have the tearaway pants?
Of course.
I'm pretty sure he does. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a ridiculous question.
Probably.
Look, guys, I can't contribute a whole lot to Saturday morning cartoons. As you may know, this might actually be a part of reason why I'm such a jerk, but I didn't have a television in my house growing up.
Yeah.
We just
blame
didn't.
It on your parents.
Yeah, you know. But I do remember watching Garfield and Friends, and I remember that I liked the Friends part a lot more than the Garfield, which was farm animals, totally unrelated to a cat and Odie, the dog. But I really like those guys. I consider them my friends.
There was a character I remember named Sheldon, and he was the chick that refused to ever come out of his shell. So he just walked around two legs inside his shell. He was awesome.
I have a feeling Dave's going to know more about every single one of these cartoons than any of us.
How do you do that, Dave?
Guys, I watched a lot of television when I was young. That was pretty much exclusively what I did. That's why I'm such a nice guy. It's so well adjusted.
When I was a kid, my mom made these VHS cassettes from some Chicago radio station or TV station. I don't know how, because we never lived in Chicago. But Super Friends. We had probably 20 or 30 episodes of Super Friends, the Legion of Doom and the Hall of Justice and all the DC Comics characters. And then obviously He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. Loved it. Mm.
The good thing about Super Friends is it was that cheap animation where like one arm in the whole picture would move like every 5 seconds.
Yeah, so they drew one still shot and then just milked it for a scene or two.
Just super enjoyable. But He-Man, one of my greatest Christmases ever, I got the Castle Grayskull for Christmas.
Wow.
Wow.
That's a big haul.
Yeah.
Hey, Dave, do you remember when we gave that as a gift to one of our friends when they got married?
I do. It was
Castle Grayskull.
I hope he still has it.
I'm sure he does. That guy is classy.
Yeah, he's not going to get rid of a Castle Grayskull when you give it to him. Garth, yeah, he's in class. So guys, I'm going to see if anyone remembers this show because it is unbelievable. It was just Mr. T.
Yes.
And he would tour the country with a teenage gymnastics team. They would run into trouble everywhere they went. There'd be crimes. And Mr. T, with the teenage gymnast, would figure out what was going on and solve these crimes. And it was just amazing.
Wow. I don't remember the cartoon, but I remember the actually live-action film where there's the breakdancers, Be Somebody or Be Somebody's Fool. Did you ever see that?
I think I spent a lot of hours seeing that with you, Stillman, and maybe Howard.
Yeah, that was one of Howard's self-help phase when Mr. T was dispensing the wisdom.
Yeah, what did you get from those?
Did he make a difference? To represent my ancestors. They're on the Mandinko tribe. And I cut my hair like this.
And imagine that wisdom in cartoon form to a bunch of small gymnasts. Fantastic. Whoever came up with that was on a lot of cocaine or just awesome.
So did they use their gymnastics ability to solve social problems? Or what was the point of them being gymnasts?
Steele, come on. A crime's going down. You have a male gymnast that is awesome at pommel horse. Like, what do you think he's going to do? Is he just going to stand there?
He's going to jump on some car and pump you the quick kick and get the guy in the face or something.
It was probably more a factor of what was going on in the culture. It wasn't Jim. Was the U.S. pretty good in the Olympics during the 80s or something?
Yeah, Peter Vidmar.
Yeah.
Probably just saw an easy way to turn a buck.
Mary Lou Retton. So everybody loved Mary Lou. So if you could team up Mr. T with Mary Lou Retton, that would have been the exact thing the 80s needed.
That would have been the original reality show right there, their wedding.
Oh, man, I would still watch that reality show. That sounds fantastic.
Dave, did you watch Hanna-Barbera cartoons?
I would, but not as – that wasn't where my focus was. What, you were into those?
I really liked them, and I didn't see them very often, but there was one called Dastardly and Muttley in their flying machines.
Classic, yeah.
Great one. A guy with a big handlebar mustache and like a sad sack dog. But the one that I only saw once or twice, but I was like, it blew my mind. It was one that I wished I could watch every week, was the Laugh Olympics.
I know what you're talking about. I've seen every 80s cartoon like dozens of times. Yeah, fantastic. They're always doing some sort of race. Dastardly and Muttley were always trying to cheat. And I don't know, Blue Falcon was probably in it. Just great. Great Bape. I think Great Bape was probably eating a little bit.
Man, I need to figure out how to watch those nowadays.
YouTube? I bet they're all there.
What about Rocky and Bullwinkle?
Ooh,
And that's quality stuff. Peabody and Sherman.
Oh, yeah. Who were they? I vaguely remember them. Wasn't that like an egghead guy and like a dog with glasses?
Yeah.
They traveled through time. And yeah, these cartoons were, like, if you watch them now, I think there's some legitimate laughs in Rocky and Bullwinkle. Like, they're actually legitimately pretty funny.
And that's probably the problem with today, where there's cartoons on 24/7, 7 days a week, that the quality, I'm sure, has just suffered.
Yeah, you don't get Super Friends anymore with the one arm moving. Yeah, they don't even do that. It's just a drawing, and they're talking.
A bunch of cartoons that seem like now are made for adults by people who smoke a lot of marijuana.
Like The Simpsons?
Yes. You got it, Howard. Right what I was thinking of.
What a modern cartoon. It's on the edge, The Simpsons.
Well, guys, I mentioned I didn't have a TV growing up. I actually still don't have one. So nice. I'm kind of out of the loop on a lot of this stuff.
Hey, well, we picked the perfect topic for you to discuss then, didn't we?
But Matthew, another big part of Saturday morning was, of course, the breakfast cereals. Did you guys have breakfast cereal in your house growing up? Was this something you were able to ingest?
Yeah. We definitely had breakfast cereal. Captain Crunch was it. Crunch berries, peanut butter crunch, is the best. And I ate it a lot as a kid and then stopped eating it. I haven't eaten it since, and I kind of miss it.
Oh, it's still so good.
I got some peanut butter crunch berries the other day, and they cut up the roof of my mouth. And I was reading online that a lot of people experience this. Apparently, like, Captain Crunch makes it really sharp so that they cut the roof of your mouth up.
Yeah, when Dan Ginnergen goes to the weight room, his muscles get ripped and he gets sore, but he doesn't cry about it.
You know? Oh, you think I was complaining? I was actually praising it as a brand strategy.
Right. Yeah, they're heavily invested in topical antibiotics for mouth cuts and sores.
It's a synergistic cross promotion.
Peanut Butter Crunch was always in the pantry growing up, and I kept going back to it. I never liked it, but every time I'd be like, no, I gotta like it this time, right? But it took until I turned 35. Now I think Peanut Butter Crunch is delicious. It's like the best thing out.
It's a great story of persistence.
Never give up on Peanut Butter Crunch. You'll get there.
Are we sure this isn't a To the Limits?
It wasn't until my 100th bowl that I finally liked the cereal.
Was the roof of your mouth like bleeding and raw and chunky?
He had to get it like a wooden one replaced. It's like a George Washington type story.
I've lost several teeth, but it's been worth it.
Dave, I loved Fruity Pebbles.
Uh-huh.
I also loved Honey Smacks, and I remember when they changed their name to get rid of the word honey because it had the connotations of sugar. It became Super Golden Crisp or Golden Crisp, but it still had Smacks the Toad with its honey. You know, it was great.
I'm sorry, still, you're confused. It's two brands. Honey Smacks is the frog. Super Golden Crisp is the bear that sings "Can't Get Enough Super Golden Crisp."
But isn't it the same cereal that just rebranded?
No, it's the same exact cereal, but it's just two different. It's like Kellogg's, and the other one is, you know, General Mills or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh man.
Wait, so my question: when you ingested that, did that ever change the smell of your urine?
Well, see, the Honeycrisp doesn't, but the Malt-O-Meal brand does. Yeah, for sure. It's like the asparagus of breakfast cereals. That's how I know it's good for me.
Anytime I eat that, it's more occasional now, and you just don't think about it. And you suddenly smell this as you're leaving yourself. You're like, holy crap, what's wrong? Do I have some type of terrible infection? And then you go back like, oh no, breakfast was Honey Smacks, so I'm good.
It's like after you eat a bunch of beets and your pee is bright red, you think, there's something wrong with me?
This never happened to me. I've never had bright red urine after eating beets.
Oh, you haven't eaten enough then.
Yeah.
Matthew, I think that's the only medical related question you've ever texted me.
I was worried. Even if I'm right, I think it was a number two, actually. It was a bowel movement. I'm like, that is neon. I mean, it's like the color of Steel's shirt there. It's bright red. And I was
take
actually.
Take it easy on your rectum, Matt.
Yeah, I was genuinely concerned.
But
how did you ingest these beets orally?
Yeah, they're actually a food, Steel.
Okay, cool.
But that's my doctor of nursing. That made me be able to get to the root of his problem, the beets. I think that was like my immediate response almost, Howard.
It was. Yeah. I think first you said I might have cancer, colon cancer. And then you said, or I could have just eaten beets.
Yeah, that's.
And I was like, oh yeah, I just ate beets.
How long was it between texts? Was it like 3 days? Oh yeah, I forgot to mention the first one. But Howard, that's what you get when you text a friend for medical advice.
It's true, I deserved it.
Yeah, he really did.
Yeah. That is payback for that smooth jazz. Yeah, it's probably cancer, Howard. It sounds like you're going to have to lose most of your colon.
After all the care you took.
I know. That would be a tragedy.
It's Saturday morning cartoons. I think that's wonderful that Jerem is keeping that tradition alive. And I think he just needs to feed his toddler some Captain Crunch, start her young so that she can build up the strength of mouth skin to be able to handle the peanut butter crunch.
So I wasn't allowed sugary cereals. So I can't contribute to that at all.
Wait, what did you eat while you were watching these cartoons?
Oatmeal. I could get like Honey Nut Cheerios, right? Because that was the sweet stuff. Or like my mom still, it had to have like some kind of berry or something in it. And so I remember eating Honey Bunches of Oats a lot. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's kind of sugary. But we would have eggs or pancakes or something every morning during the week that was not cereal or sugary.
And you grew up in California, I'm guessing?
Yep.
Yep. That sounds like a California parenting move. I love it.
It's from Northern California, so it's not that. I mean,
yeah, it's a beautiful place.
What does that mean? It sounds like a California thing.
California is my dream. I think it's the future. I wish I was eating an avocado right now.
Is that how they pronounce it in California? Avocado? Avo.
No, it's avos, bro.
Surf's up, Steel.
Yeah.
Seriously, if I could move to San Diego tomorrow, I'd be there.
Oh, yeah. The one
thing that was just brought to mind is when we lived in that big house together and Howard put a sign on the toilet that said California with an arrow pointing to the water.
Why would I do that, dude? Why would I do that?
And I just want to clarify that Howard is he's my best friend, and I've shared a lot of good experiences with him as well. I just can't remember those.
We're really happy to have Howard back on episode for his final appearance.
Yeah, thanks,
before colon cancer claims him.
Beet-induced colon cancer.
That's the worst kind.
So, Jerem, I don't know if you're ready for this. Genuinely, I don't know if you are. We have a segment commonly called Expert Testimony, where we ask an expert in different subjects all about them so we can gain a greater understanding of life. So we have some for you. Are you ready?
Yep.
Okay. From what I understand, you're an expert in all things German, or as you would say, Deutsch. Is that accurate?
For the sake of this podcast, absolutely.
I remember one of my most vivid memories of Jerem Sidwell is like 6 feet of Lederhosen at an Oktoberfest.
I lived in Germany for a couple of years and picked up some things from the culture, and then I brought that back to Provo, Utah, and shared it with the people there.
And so what does Oktoberfest consist of? Because from what I understand, I'm going to say from what I understand like 8 times, it's just alcohol drinking. What could you bring back to Provo, a city notorious for not drinking alcohol?
Well, I think that's one of the misconceptions of Oktoberfest. Is and I think it's probably because most of the people get drunk, but there's actually quite a few stereotypes that you can play off of, to which most of the people in Provo actually think is really German. Yeah, so what we did at this Oktoberfest, the Autobahn over there, which is at portions of the freeway don't have speed limits. So what we did to represent that at this Oktoberfest.
Street racing? Was it street racing?
In a sense, we got those shopping carts that looked like cars and filled them with people and then drove them around the track.
That's pretty great. That's very German.
It was, right? Absolutely. We would have our own drinking contests. Some, actually most, were not at the real Oktoberfest in Germany, but we would use root beer instead of beer. It was fresh brewed root beer. But we would fill up a rain gutter about 20 feet, two rain gutters, 20 feet long, and give about 10 to 15 people on each rain gutter straws.
A trough.
Yep. And, just press, say go, and whoever won got a handful of Ritter Sport chocolate bars, which are delicious.
Big controversy around Oktoberfest. My sources tell me Oktoberfest actually starts in September. What's up with that? Is that true?
That's true.
What?
I thought Germans were famous for being precise and on time to stuff.
Well, I think it's more of a, you know, say the day after Halloween, we start celebrating what holiday?
Okay. That makes sense.
I think they're just kind of, it takes a few weeks for the Europeans to recover.
And it makes sense. The Germans are very precise, but they want to be early to things. They're going to be there.
They're so precise, they're 2 weeks early.
Yes.
So this is my hard-hitting question regarding Germany. Is it true that Germans have no sense of humor? And if so, could you expound on this?
Yep. They have they have no humor whatsoever. Oh, I'm going to get in so much trouble.
How are they able to survive as a society without humor?
They barely did, Dave. They murdered millions of people.
No, Steelman, no. No.
I mean, if they would have just been one joke, things could have been really different in world history.
Just a different outlet for all that bent-up frustration.
Could have diffused a few situations.
The thing is they call all the Americans sarcastic, right?
Yeah.
Because that's probably mostly what we are. It was kind of hard for the first little bit because I would make jokes and say stuff and just no laugh whatsoever. In fact, I would get like a serious question back. Like, I'm like, wait, what? And then, so I didn't understand what they were saying. Yeah, it was very literal, very literal. I don't have any specific examples, but I just remember kind of being like, oh, I'm not really funny over here. I thought I was kind of funny back home in Avocado, California.
Nope. Wait, so how did that go for you, Jeremy? Because you're a pretty jovial young man. So you basically had 2 years where cracking a joke wasn't going to get you anywhere.
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't make many friends.
Hey, well, at least people were really receptive to your message, though, I can imagine.
Yeah. I remember on my birthday, all I wanted to do was, like, talk to one person. And my birthday's in December, right? So we went and we like knocked doors and we like went street contacting for 14 hours or something. I mean, like we left early just so I'd have more of a chance of actually talking to someone. And the whole day, nobody even stopped. And mostly I just got profanities yelled at me trying to talk to people.
Dave and I went to England, so we can sort of relate.
Yeah. Some of my companions, we would sit on the bus and we'd make these jokes, but we'd be making fun of ourselves and our inability to master the German language. So they had these kiosks where we'd go and get candy, right? And they had these little blue Smurfs that were gummy candies, and they were delicious. They were so good.
Wait, you ate Smurfs?
Yeah. Is that bad?
Like,
what do you mean?
Smurfs? Like from the Saturday morning cartoon? Like,
yeah, Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah, they're Howard native back to Germany, aren't they?
Howard was just going to let everything slide here, but you really took cruel. It too far.
I mean, they're like, you know, I mean, I don't know if they were real Smurfs. I never thought to ask, but anyway, so we would go to these kiosks and we would order quite loudly. We'd be like, so the word for Smurf is like Schlumpfe, and the word for slut is Schlampe. And so we would, you know, they're kind of similar. And so we would go and we'd ask for a bag of sluts. And we'd just be like, hey, put 10 sluts in that bag and we'll take it. And the kids around us would just bust up laughing. And they're like, oh, this is hilarious. You guys are so stupid. And we're like, we're getting a laugh. This is great. at our own expense. So there's a couple words like that we would, you know, we get a couple laughs at and I felt good.
I'm glad you're able to feel good. And this is my other hard-hitting German question. There are two bands from Germany that are just kind of pillars of German culture, Rammstein and Kraftwerk. So the question is, Rammstein or Kraftwerk? Who are you going with?
Are you kidding? Is that a real question? It's Rammstein. Come on.
What? Rammstein? That seems like an upset. Why Rammstein?
Who would pick Kraftwerk? I mean, I think after 2 years of being rejected by everyone I ever saw, I just needed a little Rammstein to get me through the day.
Yeah.
Wait, were those two bands actually popular in Germany? Those are the only two German bands I could possibly think of.
No. I mean, people would talk about Rammstein a little bit, but I think that was mostly I heard way more about Rammstein in America than I did ever in Germany. Mm-hmm. I heard about David Hasselhoff a little bit in Germany, actually, which I thought was great.
Germans do love him, right?
Oh, yeah. Actually, one of these friends, she had a David Hasselhoff pillowcase. It was awesome. It existed until I went to Germany. I thought, the world's going to be okay.
Was it a pillowcase or was it a David Hasselhoff body pillow? Like
Oh, no, she didn't admit to that.
No.
But she had the full sheet set of David Hasselhoff.
That is cool. Oh,
she was wrapped up in the Hoff.
Yep.
You know who it was in England for a bunch of the people that I met? I don't know if it was for you, Dave. Donny Osmond?
Yeah, he was huge in England.
He was the Hoff in England.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We met dozens of people who loved Donny Osmond.
Did they have pillowcases of them or like t-shirts?
Intimate wear.
So, Jaron, you're an expert in a few other areas.
I'm so glad my ancestors left Europe.
What do you have against the Hoff, Howard?
Go ahead with your question, sorry.
You got some of the chest air poking out. Come on.
You feel threatened by the Hoff, don't you, Howard?
Of course we do. Of course I do.
It's all those curly hair.
Yeah,
huh?
It's the hair. It's the confidence, too. Just no shame. Full of bravado. That guy's amazing.
It's got to be so frustrating to you. I understand. So Jeremy, you're also an expert in being extremely tall. So I have a few questions for you regarding that.
Okay.
Do you have to craft your own pants?
No, I don't. So I was a swimmer in high school, and part of the joy of swimming was you would pull your Speedo down a little bit. And the water would flow through your cheeks.
What?
I mean, what?
No, continue. Yes, I want to see where this is going.
Doesn't it make a ton of sense why Howard's hanging out there tonight?
No. Anyway, I just wear my pants a little lower is the end of the story. That's all. I get a 34-inch inseam, and if I wear my pants a little lower, they go to my shoes, which is great.
Oh man, he was going, he was felt totally at peace, and then we just teased him into cutting that short story short.
I'm sorry.
I have a question, Jeremy. When did you become noticeably taller than your peers?
Later in high school.
Yeah.
So when I was a freshman in high school, I was 5'6" and less than 110 pounds.
Wow.
I was kind of like a Dave Jensen.
Those are my stats, actually. Exactly.
You're like a grown Dave Jensen.
Yeah, at 14. So I guess I didn't like that everyone started growing taller than me. And so by my junior year, I was like 6'2 and more pounds. Wow. And then, you know, later in college, I grew to be 6'6. And that's the end of that.
Wow.
I have two older brothers, and they were bigger and meaner than me growing up. They would actually hold my arms. Each one would hold an arm, and then they'd take turns punching me in the stomach. I remember they thought it was so fun, and they're like, yeah, you're going to be a stuntman when you grow up because we can take all these punches, and it's great. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to be an actor. And then I realized they were just being mean. And so I knew I wasn't going to be bigger than them because I was like, I wasn't going to be able to fight them. And so I just willed myself to be taller because I knew that was the only thing I could have on them.
Wow. Powerful will.
You still weigh, like, what, 110 now, Sidwell, or is it 120?
I'm in 135, buddy. Back off.
Nice. You bulked up since college.
Fatherhood. Fatherhood.
Yeah. Just,
oh. So do you have any awesome, awkward stories from your height?
This is probably the most fascinating thing Dave's ever asked anybody about. This is like his like lifelong like, fantasy to be taller than like taller than a room full of people. He's like, just tell me more about what it feels like.
It's actually tough. You don't fit in any cars. I remember test driving a car, stopping at a light, and the guy in the car was like, okay, you can go. And I couldn't see the light because my head was so close to the car that it blocked my vision. And so it's just, oh yeah, it's rough. In high school or in college, whenever we were in a group setting and somebody did something bad, the security would see me first because my head would just be up above everyone else's. I remember at dances, we'd like throw someone in the air. What are they called? Like yard duties or security guard or whatever. The dance would be like, you get over here. And I'd be like, me, what? Because it was like one lone head above a sea of. So anyway, I don't recommend it. I want to get, you know, shin extensions or anything, Dave. Just stay where you are, buddy.
Yeah, I'm loving it. I'm comfortable disappearing in the crowd.
Also, one more thing. European doors are roughly about 6'5".
Yeah.
So for the first few months of being in Germany, every door that I would walk into, I would hit my head. Still, and I wouldn't even get a laugh from that.
Oh, man, that's good comedy. So we have a few more questions for you. Then we probably got to move on to Unchained Melodies. But you actually – stuff you're actually into and do is you worked – you did some stuff in film production for a few years, and now you're working with animation. What do you do now, Jim?
So right now in Utah, I work for the Corporation of the Presiding Bishopric, which is the church, and I do visual effects and motion graphics for them. But before that, I was in New Zealand and Los Angeles, and I worked on a number of feature films and lots of commercials.
Okay.
So that's what I did, and my capacity is in the management of it. So I'm like a producer or a production manager. So I'm managing, for example, when I was in New Zealand on like Avatar or the Avengers, I would manage the animation team and the pre-production teams, which involved like modeling and layout and the animation. And then we'd ship that off to the lighting and compositing teams.
Wait, so you actually worked on like some cool movies, Jerem?
Yeah. Dave, I think last time we talked, I only worked on a Tim Allen movie, but my career went uphill from that.
Wait, hold on. You went uphill from Tim Allen?
Well, yeah, I mean, I worked on Texas Chainsaw Massacre after that.
Oh, yeah, that's terrific. Yeah, what's your favorite movie you worked on?
The Avengers, for sure.
That's cool.
That was just fun. You got to play with superheroes, you know? It's like every day with Saturday morning cartoons.
So what's your take on living scriptures? Are those, I mean, I would have to say that set the gold standard for me in terms of cartoons. It wasn't a Saturday morning, but it was one of the things I was allowed to watch on Sundays.
Yeah, that was the rule in our house too. We'd blow through those. I mean, we'd watch three or four of them, you know, and be like, wow, that's awesome. I
got that wicked King Noah.
That guy was junky.
So, Sid, well, why'd you leave the Hollywood stuff to go to Utah?
So when I was working on Adventures of Tintin, I'd worked really hard to get ahead of schedule to make it so our team wouldn't have to work that much overtime. At the end of the day, we were really far ahead, and animation was hundreds of shots ahead of schedule and months ahead of schedule. And I thought, this is great. I won't have to work overtime at the end of the movie, which is inevitable. Everybody starts doing 80, 90, 100-hour weeks the last few months of the movie, or longer depending on the difficulty and whatnot of the movie. So anyway, at the end, we ended up, the producer still wanted us there, and I was still doing 90 hour weeks, and I thought, we're just here to babysit. We weren't even doing anything, we're just babysitting. And I thought, oh, this is the worst. And at the time, I was actually married, and I never saw my wife. I would leave in the morning before she woke up and come home at night after she was asleep. Did that for a few months, and I thought, this is kind of lame. Yeah, so I actually I got lucky, I think, and the church contacted me because they needed some help for some films that they were doing. you know, visual effects is kind of a new industry, and there's not many people in the world that can organize way and do it for a cheaper budget. So I got to come out here, and I said, great, I'll come out here if I work 40-hour weeks. And so as soon as the films were over, I just went to 40, and now I get to hang out with my baby Scarlett and my little wife and bald men. It's really a dream come true. Like,
it's true.
Can I ask you now, do you have your own artistic projects or things in either film or animation that you would like to do or that you want to do as personal kind of ambitions?
Yeah, actually, I do want to – I kind of want to do a little children's book this next year, just, you know, an e-book as well as a real tangible book. And I want to do a couple apps, kind of some games and educational ones. But I've got to spec them out a little bit more and do a little bit more research. But that's my goal for kind of next year, is to make something happen there.
I'd advise looking into Pickle Soda Publishing. There's a really great publishing house that's putting out some great, great, great titles the last few years.
Yeah, they did really well.
Okay, yeah, I'll look into them. Are they pretty big? I mean, they've got a great name.
I don't know their size. It's mostly quality, I think. I don't know how many units they've moved in the last year, but
did they do the most recent J.K. Rowling book?
They did Gentle Bear. I think that's where they made their reputation.
Okay. Yeah, Gentle Bear.
It's a great book. You should really look into it. Wait, so will you do the graphic stuff for the book, or is you more gonna write it and kind of visualize it?
I think I'll write the story and do some sketches, and then I'd probably hire an artist that is better at it than me. I'm kind of after a certain style, so I'll try to find somebody that can do that.
Yeah, I love children's books, and I've tried to draw some and done some stuff, but we read so many books in our house. Some of the books I really like, I don't know, the quality of the art doesn't necessarily matter if the story is awesome. Like,
right,
you don't care.
I totally agree. I think that's something that we see in Hollywood with movies as well, is you can spend a bajillion dollars on visual effects or actors or whatever, but if the story's not there, then you're not going to get your return on your investment kind of thing. And people just kind of forget about it.
Narratives. Story matters.
Yep. Yeah.
So that's cool. So how long have you been in Utah now with a normal work week?
2.5 years.
So that got you up.
I got more gray hair than ever, but yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't going to mention it, Jaren, but yeah, you look terrible. I wasn't going to talk about it.
Yeah, you've aged.
Really aged.
You've aged poorly.
Usually I don't do TV appearances or anything like this, but strictly radio is what I try to go to.
Have you considered more avos, bro?
No, being in Utah, it's hard to get that fresh fruit and veggies, you know?
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Yeah, it's all canned. It's all canned there.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad we were able to talk about this. I think making career choices based on family, that's why I've ended up in the job I'm doing, so I can spend time with my family and not have to be at a hospital at weird hours or be on call doing goofy stuff. I'd rather be at home. I'm sure it was cool working on the Avengers, but it's got to be way cooler to have a daughter.
I thought you were going to say it's got to be way cooler working for the presiding bishopric.
I mean, I would go with daughters way cooler. It's got its pluses, right? I mean, I love being with my family. The thing is it's kind of hard sometimes because I am part of this corporation that's not really focused on the creative studio, you know? Mm-hmm. And so there's those challenges there. And I do kind of miss the prestige of saying, hey, look, this is a trailer for Avatar that I'm working on, everybody. And then everyone on Facebook or social media is like, whoa, that guy's cool. I just like for people to think I'm cool. That's why I grew my mustache.
Hey, but just wait till they see the next general conference talk that the presiding bishop, you're like, I work for this guy.
Right?
Fiscal prudence.
Actually, we did do something for Elder Cook's talk. He was talking about Bristol, England, and the port there.
And he didn't want to use actual footage because he didn't want people to be depressed. He's like, animate it and make it look sunny.
Well, it was a time lapse. The point of it was something about the tides can change up to 30 feet per day there. And so the ships that don't time it right and don't prepare get stuck, and they actually run adry aground. And so we did a quick time-lapse animation of these little ships tipping over and the tide receding and all this. And it was great. It was fun. We had 2 weeks to do it. But on social media, people were like, whoa, General Conference visuals. This looks like a level Mario Kart. Wow. We're big time.
It brought home the message of the talk to me. I couldn't have understood it without the visual. So thank you, Jeremy.
Yeah, that's what it's there for.
It's been awesome talking with you guys. Unfortunately, we're going to start moving towards the close, and we're going to do Unchained Melodies. This is an important one. This was inspired by Jerem Sidwell's career and his love of animated features featuring animals singing. So this Unchained Melodies, we're each selecting a song from an animated feature that makes you cry. Howard, we haven't heard from you for a little while. What do you got for us?
You know, Dave, I was going to choose Somewhere Out There in American Tale, but then I saw someone else had chosen that one.
Hey, well, you're first. Go ahead.
I chose a different one, which I want to stick with, which is Dream to Dream, which is on the same movie, an American Tale, and it's the little mouse, and she's super attractive. on her. But she's singing this song, and the villain, the cat, hears the music and is just taken away and develops a little crush on this mouse, and I just could totally relate to that cat, and I love that, and it made me cry. She's as beautiful as her voice.
I can still make it right. I can see so far in my dreams. I'll follow my dreams until they come true.
I like to think that she's singing about me.
Inside, no one else ever sees. You will go so far in my dreams. Somewhere in my dreams. Your dreams.
I think she's singing to all of us, man.
No.
That's
not. Dave, no. She's singing to me, all right?
Two things I just noticed about that video, Matt, I really appreciated. One, it seems like she had a slight lisp on her R's, dweeming ho dweems. Did you hear that a little bit?
Sure, yeah.
Nice. And the other was, as a mouse, she's fine and everything, but she has hair continuously from her top of her head down to her nostrils. She's got like a mohawk of hair that runs along the length of her nose. Was that one of the endearing traits you liked?
Like, yeah, that's what I said at the beginning. She was very attractive.
Vertical unibrow?
Not just for a mouse, but...
Into the vertical unibrows. I got it. Okay.
So guys, I'm going to follow that song up with a home run. That song was like a base hit. That song's like a bunt, and there was a throwing error, so she made it to first base.
Whoa.
And then Feifel comes in and he says, you guys want emotion. You guys want a song that's going to make you cry. And Howard, really, honestly, you agree with me on this. And he sings Somewhere Out There and you're going to have tears. Eventually. They'll come. They're going to come.
I'm already crying, Dave.
Yeah, just the introduction's enough to get you stirred up a little bit, huh?
This is Linda Ronstadt with James Ingram.
Oh, the radio version.
Oh, okay. Do you want the... What do you want? I don't know which...
The animated version is what I prefer, to be honest. Yeah.
Thank you.
That's emotional. Howard, why was that your initial pick, man?
Oh, I really want to talk about it, Dave. It just really puts into words feelings that I haven't ever been able to express myself.
It's so good. He was separated from his family, of course, and he knew that somewhere out there there was a love that they were sending out over the wavelength through the stars to him. And I like to think that we all have someone out there that loves us.
That's beautiful. So I didn't exactly realize this was going to be one that makes you cry, so I picked a different one. But instead, I'm going to say, when I used to watch the Disney classic Robin Hood, part when the Sheriff of Nottingham comes and arrests Friar Tuck, gutted me.
Mm.
I used to weep about at that part. And then after I'd watched it a couple times, apparently my mom recorded this in my journal, I used to kneel down while the movie was playing and pray to ask God to release Friar Tuck from his chains and make everything come right. And you know what?
You're much more of a man of faith than I.
That was my first answered prayer. I did not do it the first time I watched it. I had to make sure I'd seen it a couple times, I think, so I wouldn't have any, like, crises of faith. But, I mean, that was an emotional moment for me. And so, although this song has nothing to do with Friar Tuck's arrest, it's a great one, and it's from the great Roger Miller from Robin Hood.
Robin Hood and Little John walking through the forest, laughing back and forth at what the other has to say. Reminiscing this and that and having such a good time. Oodle-lolly, golly, what a day. Never ever thinking there was danger in the water they were drinking, they just guzzled it down. Never dreaming that a scheming sheriff and his posse was watching them and gathering around.
It's a great soundtrack. You really should have gone with the Every Town Has Its Ups and Downs.
Oh, but not in Nottingham. That's the one.
That's a sad one. You kind of blew it.
I should have consulted with you. I blew it.
That's the one we pulled up over here and we started to watch that clip.
That makes great sense because that's the part that actually you cry during. I couldn't remember. Yeah. Okay. Well, if I was a professional, that's what I would have picked.
No, but sadly you're not. But we're going to talk to a professional now. This is Jerem Sidwell. Jerem, what do you have for us?
I mean, I haven't cried since Dave pushed me through the window.
And he wasn't crying out of pain. He was crying for the window.
I rewatched it today and I realized, you know, Howard pointed out that maybe this isn't exactly a song, but I do love Bounden, the Pixar short. I think it played in front of The Incredibles, but it's about this little sheep, and he danced and had a jovial old time for, you know, the prairie dogs. And then one day somebody came and sheared off all his beautiful wool, and he just was having a hard time until an American jackalope came along and sang him a song about Bounden and Rebounden. And it's a beautiful 4-minute short that apparently isn't a song.
Is there a song in it, and where does it appear?
So the whole thing has just got a little bit of music playing in the background, and it's just kind of narrated.
Yeah, it's not
that I actually remember now.
Basic, simple forms. So this is what a professional picks, Stillman. Okay, this is how he does it.
This is simple music right here.
Nice little harmonica.
There's a naked sheared sheep here.
Yeah. That's the
dancing. Head in the right place and hey, you're complete. He's got buck teeth. For the dancing, you can do more. You can reach great heights. In fact, you can soar. You just get a leg up and you slap it on down. And you'll find you're up in what's called the bound and rebound. Bound and you're up like this to the sky. And I think you can do it if you give it a try.
I'm crying because of the song.
First get a leg up, slap it on down.
Think there's dancing.
Thank you.
So every year, long about May, they load him up.
You pick your leg up and you put it on down. Bound, bound, bound and rebound. I love it.
Almost better without the animation. It's a standalone piece, really.
Right? Powerful, I think.
I mean...
So, everybody do yourself a favor. If you're feeling a little bit down, you felt like your wool has been shorn, just watch this short film, and I think you're going to rebound from whatever's got you feeling down.
Yeah.
I hate feeling shorn.
Yeah. I was going to say, this actually is – Howard's done that before, and I'm surprised you're not more emotional about this, Howard.
Yeah. Howard, I remember the first time you shaved your head. It was kind of terrifying, and you were worried. But you rebounded from it, and you've done okay ever since.
Ups and downs. It's an integral part of who I am.
Well, we're going to close this down. It's been so wonderful. It's been great to see you, Jerem. Your mustache is inspirational. Your choice of song, inspirational, and your wisdom and your expertise has been inspirational as well. But from what I understand, you and Matt have selected a passage for book wisdom that you're going to share with us.
That's right. I'll leave it up to the professional. I feel like I kind of bombed on the song, so I'm just going to hope so I end on a higher note with Matt.
I'm here in Utah. I spent the last 2 days at a conference with some people from the Arbinger Institute, and I came and mentioned that to Jerem, and Jerem said, "Oh, I'm reading a book by those guys." And we talked about it a little bit, and so I pulled a little bit out of this book. It's called Bonds That Make Us Free, Healing Our Relationships, Coming to Ourselves by C. Terry Warner, who's a philosopher. And this is pulled out of the section. It's a chapter 9. It's about influence, how to influence others to change. And here's how it starts. It says, "We may think we can influence someone by deliberately mimicking exemplary behavior. This seldom ever works. When we manipulate in this manner, we aren't primarily responding to the needs of another, but are pursuing the goal of getting them to change. There's an accusation embedded in this effort. The message is, you are inadequate. You need to shape up. Thus, our motivation is not pure, and that makes what we do a counterfeit of caring. This helps us appreciate the paradoxical, or at least ironic, quality of influence. If we try to influence others for our own sake and not strictly for theirs, our efforts will probably backfire. Those we seek to change will detect our intent. It is simply futile to try to challenge another or to try to change another if we do so in a critical spirit, even a mild one. Generally speaking, we influence others most profoundly when we do not seek to change them at all, but simply go about straightforwardly doing the right and the loving thing."
Whoa.
It's a great book. I remember when Dave and I went to Mexico, I brought this as beach reading, and I sat and read it, and Dave told me that he couldn't make his way through it, and I've read it probably 3 times since then, so that's the kind of book it is. And Jerem told me that he's only reading it when he's on the toilet, so take that for what it is.
It's very similar to a Mexican beach.
But I think what he says really rings true. When you're seeking to influence somebody, it's really easy to be transparent when that's all you're doing is you want this person to change. And it just seems like they're not going to change if that's how you're approaching it.
So did you find out about Arbinger, Howard?
I found out about it first when I was 18 years old and my uncle, I was kind of giving my typical thing that I still give, which I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. And one day I'm going to figure this out. And he said, "Well, you should read this book." And he recommended an Arbinger book for me, and I read it. And then I went and worked at a place that used the material, a wilderness therapy program. Mm. And then I went and worked at a boys' ranch that used the material. I've just kind of personally kept up with it.
Awesome. So the book that you read is from The Bonds That Make Us Free?
That's right.
Yep.
Good message. It was wonderful to see you guys. Thanks for being on, Jerem.
Hey, that was fun. Thank you to both Steele and Jensen and Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah.
love you, Dunkin' Donuts.
Man, the Boston cream. Am I right, guys? The Boston cream.
Can't beat it.
Well, you can, but shouldn't.
You can punch it.
Thanks, Howard.
You're like threatening the sponsor, Howard. You can't do that.
No. We're going to have to edit that out, Matt. Come on.
I think that's all we're going to have to edit out.
Off the chain. It's off the chain.
How many hours a week do you guys work?
45.
Sounds like a grind.
I don't think I'm going to like this podcast. This is going to be depressing at the end.
Anything over 20 hours is just ridiculous, Jeremy.
Hey, Dave, what are you? Are you a lawyer or a nurse or a both?
I'm a failed law student. I'm a doctor of nursing, Jeremy.
I don't know. What does that mean?
It means he went to a website and printed off some like fancy fake diploma.
Oh, yeah, I became a pastor like that. Same way.